This is State of the Union, the DC 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. This is our first show of the new year. I'm your host, Chris Policano. DC 37 is New York City's largest public employee union. We have 125,000 members and nearly 50,000 retirees. We are part of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME. We're on the air Sundays at 8 p.m. and we rebroadcast on Wednesdays at 1:30 p.m. We're also available on podcast. Simply go to the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad and search for DC 37 State of the Union. And you can follow us on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Check out our website, www.dc37.net. Keep an eye out for the public employee press in your mailbox. And if you have any comments about our show, please drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. Your feedback is always welcome. This is the first show of the new year, and we're doing this on Martin Luther King's birthday weekend. Tomorrow is the 89th, would be the 89th birthday of Dr. Martin Luther King. And tonight we have on the line from Washington, D.C., AFSCME Assistant Director of Political Action, Kenny Diggs. Welcome to the show, Kenny.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
He would be 89 years old if he had lived, and this April will mark the 50th anniversary of his death in Memphis, Tennessee. Dr. King's death has profound meaning to DC 37 and other AFSCME unions across the country. Dr. King was in Memphis, after all, supporting 1,300 striking sanitation workers from AFSCME Local 1733 when he was shot on the balcony of the Lorraine Motel. Most of those on strike were African-American. They were fighting for wages that would help them feed their families. They were striking for dignity and respect, and they carried signs that declared, "I am a man." This year, to commemorate his anniversary and to remind the country that the fights for civil rights and workers' rights are one and the same, AFSCME has launched I Am 2018. Kenny, let's talk about it.
Sure.
What is I Am 2018?
I Am 2018 is not just a commemoration of the death of the tragic death of Martin Luther King Jr., but it is also a call to action for today. Because unfortunately, we've made a lot of strides, and so no one has taken anything away from that. But unfortunately, we have a lot further to go. There are several or two or three of the sanitation workers that are still on the job today and not receiving a pension. And so in the political climate that we see across our great nation, it's still, if Dr. King was here, he would probably still be working hard and fighting for the working class and the poor. And so 2018, as I said, is a call to action. It is, we're asking people to participate in different ways, not just on his birthday, but all year. And so what we've done is partnered with the Church of God in Christ, COGIC, along with other allies, labor unions, businesses, nonprofit organizations, to basically create a new movement to engage people where they are, and to under two lenses, criminal justice and economic empowerment. And so I Am 2018 will have three phases. The pre-Memphis events. This weekend will be in Houston with the AFL-CIO celebrating the Martin Luther King birthday weekend. We'll be on Monday, be in L.A. at the NAACP Image Awards, where the strikers, the living strikers, received the Vanguard Award. Former Secretary-Treasurer of AFSCME, Bill Lucey, will be receiving the Chairman's Award.
Bill Lucey was in Memphis, wasn't he, when Martin Luther King was shot?
He was. He's credited as one of the practitioners and strategists of the campaign, the I Am a Man campaign for the sanitation workers' strike. And so he will be, again, receiving that award. And so in 30 seconds or less, the campaign is that we're doing now is an initiative to go beyond April 4th, the day that Dr. King was assassinated, and to springboard out of Memphis a new movement in cities across the country with and without civil unrest, not just for African Americans, but for all people, and to get them civically engaged in a nonpartisan way, to vote their economic interest, to work with local elected officials, not just on the national level, but more importantly, on the local level where the issues hit them, hit people every day. People want to make sure that their trash is taken out, they have safe streets, that the fire department responds, and that the DMV is working appropriately. And all of those functions are provided by hardworking, typically union members, which we represent, and people go to church, and that's where Kojic represents. And so we're merging the two to try to get unions, church or faith-based communities, and just communities to come together, to work together, to cross partisanship aisles and work together to uplift and elevate all communities, but those that are more challenged than others. And so that's what the campaign is really about, and it's focusing to empower people through two or three things. The first is issue education. The second is how to lobby and have your voice heard on a local level, and then how to turn that into action. And then to finally keep those elected officials accountable, because those, they're our resources, and you know, we want to make sure that people have the right to vote, that people go vote, but more importantly, that legislation is passed on a local level that then will echo on the national level, that keep people empowered to have a fair and living wage, that they can have quality, affordable health care, all those buzzwords that the Washington crowd talk about.
You know, this was never easy. I mean, Dr. King gave his life for the cause, but this is the struggle continues, and this is not easy. I was looking at Bernie King when there was some concern about the and talk about the NFL players taking a knee at the football games. Bernice King reminded folks that people didn't approve of the way my father protested injustice either. Said he was causing trouble, called him an outside agitator. And it just, you know, we celebrate Martin Luther King. He is the symbol of, you know, the fight for civil rights. But it was never easy. And as we lived today in 2018, the context in which we're doing this, things really haven't gotten easier. There has been progress, as you pointed out, but the struggle really does continue in 2018.
You're exactly right. Change is never easy, and people, whether they like to admit it or not, don't like change. And so there's always a select few who step out in front, and what I like to say is have to get bloody to break the glass, to make sure that everyone behind them, like Dr. King had to do, can take a step forward. And so this is not easy work, and what we don't want it to be is geared towards an election cycle where we only come out and talk to people during an election cycle, and after the election is over, we then go home and act like the person that we put in there is not human and that they're superhuman. And so for things to change, we all have to get involved. And that's what Dr. King represented for us. And so the sanitation workers as well, they took the first step. And Dr. King actually came to assist them, not necessarily lead them. And so people, just like you and me, Chris, stepped out and stepped up.
Right. Well, here's the other thing. Dr. King, and we always have to remind folks of this, Dr. King believed fervently in the fight for civil rights is the same as the fight for labor rights. He was a staunch opponent of right to work, called it a fraud, pointed out that where there were states with right to work laws, wages were lower and working conditions were poorer for working people. And that message has also got to be brought back in the context of 2018, when there are so many attacks on the labor movement and unions across the country.
You're exactly right. Public employee unions are facing a Supreme Court case now by the name of Janus that will essentially strip all of those rights away from us. If we don't stand together, just like in collective bargaining, we get nowhere. And so whether it be the Supreme Court or the local court, we have to be participatory in the electoral and legislative, let me repeat that, the electoral and the legislative process, and so that we can stand together so that people can't divide us and allow all the strides that the civil rights icons have made and your mom and dad or your grandmother and grandfather or your uncle or aunt or yourself had made, we can't go back. We've got to keep moving forward.
We've just got about a minute left. We're talking with Kenny Diggs from AFSCME about the I Am 2008 campaign that will be taking place throughout the year. How do folks find out more about the I Am 2018 effort?
Well, you can always go to the website, IAM2018.org, or you can find us on social media via Twitter. But more importantly, you should look for us online. Look at us this weekend at the NAACP Image Awards. We'll be announcing a partnership and celebrating the lives and the legacy of the surviving strikers. There were 1,300 men that went on strike, and that the women and families that supported them during their strike, which was from February to April. Can you imagine not having a check from February to April
right.
in this day and time,
right.
let alone then? And so check us out on social media. We'll be in your city.
And DC 37, we should point out to listeners, DC 37 and other unions in New York will be commemorating and working on I Am 2018.
They're fully engaged and activated as we speak. So, yes, you're absolutely correct.
Kenny Diggs, AFSCME's Assistant Director of Political Action. Want to thank you for taking the time out, and we'll be talking again, bro.
Thank you, brother, and thanks to your listeners for taking the time to listen.
All right, and we'll be right back.
Were you a September 11th responder or volunteer? Were you present at the dust cloud on 9/11? Do you live, work, or go to school in the New York City disaster area on 9/11 or in the following months? Do you now suffer from problems such as chronic cough, shortness of breath, anxiety, depression, or have other symptoms? If so, you may be eligible for the World Trade Center Health Program and could receive medical monitoring and treatment at no out-of-pocket cost to you. To learn more about the program and get an application, go to www.cdc.gov/WTC or call 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care. Call today. 1-888-982-4748. 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care.
Thank you. We're back. This is State of the Union, the DC 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. We're on Sundays at 8, and we rebroadcast on Wednesdays at 1:30 p.m. I'm Chris Policano. Crime in New York continues to drop. In 2017, there were fewer than 300 murders in the city, the lowest since reliable records have existed. Joining us by phone to talk about this is Robert George, a member of the editorial board of the New York Daily News. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Thank you, Chris. It's great to be here once again.
I mean, we're really talking about crime hasn't been this low since the 1950s. They're talking about, we're talking about 50 years plus of progress in terms of lowering the crime rate.
And particularly the major stuff, murder and shootings. I mean, you can always find some numbers where there's a little bit of a rise in one, you know, maybe burglary over here, and there have been a couple of rape maybe up slightly, but I think that's because more women are more comfortable coming forward and things like that. But in terms of the top line one, murder, and you want to contrast it with, you know, like what it was, you know, 1990 when there were, 2,500 people getting killed in New York City, and now, less than 300. I mean, it's an absolutely amazing leap forward.
We're as safe as we were back in the days when Fifth Avenue went two ways. Everybody wore hats. I mean, I'm thinking about those clips of New York City in the 1950s, and everyone talking about those were the good old days. Well, folks, we're in terms of violent crime, we apparently are in the good old days. I want to start right off the bat. One controversial policing tactic was stop and frisk. And when the mayor of the city, the now mayor of the city of New York, ran for office, he was proposing to stop and frisk, and he got a lot of blowback from various quarters, including your newspaper. And
In fact, actually, from both of my newspapers, because at that time I was at the competitor, the New York Post,
and
I've been at the Daily News for nearly two years now. But both editorial boards had similar positions on that. They were very supportive of the broken windows policing, going back to the 1990s, and very strongly supportive of stop and frisk, and basically starting in 2009-2010, there became a very strong grassroots opposition to how stop and frisk was being administered. The then mayor Bloomberg and the then police commissioner Ray Kelly, pushed back against that, and the editorial boards of the two tabloid papers supported the pushback against the stop and frisk pushback. But basically starting in 2011 is when Kelly started to dial it back. He didn't publicly say it, but he started to dial it down. So the peak was 2011, and then it started to come down slowly, but not to the extent that for the average African American or Latino person, predominantly male, on the street would necessarily have noticed. And then, of course, in 2013, you had Shira Shineland coming out with her
Judge Shineland
deciding in favor of the people who were suing against stop and frisk, and she made a judgment that it was being engaged on in a discriminatory manner, and she laid out a number of measures she said that needed to be fixed to fix that, which included a federal monitor, internal NYPD inspector general, and a number of other, things. And parallel with that, you had the city council also coming in with some of their own measures. So about a year and a half ago, middle of August 2016. The Daily News editorial board, took a look at the numbers then, and we had seen a series of years of record low murder numbers, while at the same time the stop and frisk numbers were plunging. Whereas, as I said, under Kelly, in 2012 into 2013, they came down slightly, and then when Mayor de Blasio came in and Bill Bratton came in, they just plunged. So now the stop and frisk numbers are probably 97% fewer than what was happening at the height, while at the same time we also have record numbers of murders as well. And it's in murder is a really important crime to keep a look at right now, because some people can make the argument that, well, the city council has decriminalized a number of behaviors, like for example, public urination is not necessarily going to be an arrestable offense, and so some people would say, oh, well, crime is down because if you decriminalize a whole bunch of things, obviously you can have fewer crimes. You can't decriminalize murder, and if there's a dead body
or violent crime, I mean any violent crime
or violent crime, yeah, and so if a dead body is a dead body, and we are most fortunate that we are, as the saying goes, we are living in the safest big city in the country. And I mean, it's remarkable that there are fewer murders in New York City than there were last year than there were in Baltimore and Philadelphia combined. In fact, I think there are fewer in New York than there were in just Baltimore alone, if I'm not mistaken. So this is not a case for some people would have been saying that the crime rate, the murder rate in New York is going down because it's been going down, it's been plunging across the country, over the last couple of decades as well. That was true up until just a few years ago. I mean, the trend line was all going in the same direction. But it still continued to plunge in New York, even as there were slight upticks in places, big upticks in Chicago, upticks in Baltimore, and some other cities as well. So we are doing things. There's something going on here in New York that is making it unique.
And Giuliani took a lot of credit for reducing crime. Mayor de Blasio talks about the city being safe, but may not be getting the credit that Giuliani insisted upon when the crime numbers were going down.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a number of reasons for that. Well, first of all, the numbers were just so horrific in the early 90s. And it is interesting because I always think it's important to try and keep track of the data as much as possible, so you can give credit and responsibility or blame depending on what the circumstances are, where it's due. The peak of murder in New York was 1990. The tick down actually began a couple of years before Giuliani came into office. You had Mayor Dinkins was partly pushed by an assertive city council to hire more cops.
Safe streets, safe city.
Exactly. That started some things, and then Rudy Giuliani was able to take advantage, and I'm saying this in a good way, take advantage of the more cops on the streets, bringing in Bratton with some of his kind of dynamic strategies as well, and so that accelerated what was beginning in 92, 93. Then Bloomberg picked that up along, you know, along with Kelly. And I've got a lot of respect for Ray Kelly, but I think one of the mistakes that he did do was the ramp up on stop and frisk, you know, came with Kelly. Bratton used it sparingly, but not to the extent that Kelly did, and he ramped it up, and it created a lot of unnecessary tension between the NYPD and communities of color.
Which is interesting because Ray Kelly was also David Dinkins' police commissioner for a while, wasn't he?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. In fact, Bill Bratton succeeded. Bill Bratton succeeded Ray Kelly as commissioner twice. First from Dinkins to Giuliani, and then from De Blasio, and then from Bloomberg to De Blasio. So that is interesting.
And then the other thing, as you say, David Dinkins did not get perhaps the credit that he deserved for bringing down, although to be fair on this, as I'm saying it, Safe Street, Safe City was a major initiative of his, and he certainly pointed out that he was responsible for that. I always thought that Giuliani did a wonderful job of managing expectations, that he saw the numbers were going down, and let's say the numbers were going down by 8%, and he said, I'm going to reduce crime by 4%, and then he exceeded those expectations, and everybody thought he was a genius. I mean, that's my own little take on how that went down.
I mean, I think there is a certain an aspect to that, and frankly, if you're the average person in New York, I was in D.C. I was still living in D.C. in 92, 93, and so forth. But you know, if murder drops from 2,300 to 2,000, you know, in a year and a half.
Right.
If you're the average New Yorker, you don't notice that. That's just not. I mean, it's still 2,000 people are getting killed. There are still neighborhoods that you're afraid to go. That you'd be afraid to go in, and it's just not noticeable. And there were a whole lot of other things that were going on. You know, in 89, 90, 91, 92 nights, and obviously you had. You had Crown Heights, which it fueled into this idea of a city that was out of control. So even as the murders may have been going down, Mayor Dinkins, perhaps unfairly, was seen as a not strong enough mayor to try and get the city under control. Whereas, and then you know, Giuliani, you know, partly because of the attitude that he projected, was able to then sort of take advantage as the numbers dropped from 2,300 to 2,000 to 1,800 to 1,700 and so forth.
Robert, I knew this was going to fly by. We are out of time. Thank you very much for joining us. Daily News editorial writer Robert George.
Thank you, Chris.
And I look forward to talking to you again, sir.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Before we go, we have a couple of announcements. DC 37 Executive Director Henry Garrido invites you to a special ribbon-cutting ceremony to kick off our month-long celebration of Black History. Join us as we celebrate the 90th birthday of former Executive Director Lillian Roberts on Thursday, February 1st at Union Headquarters. For details, call 212-815-1113. That's all the time we've got. I want to thank our guests, AFSCME Assistant Director of Political Action Kenny Diggs and New York Daily News editorial writer Robert George for joining us this evening. Any comments about today or any other of our shows, please drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. Our producer is Rudy Orozco. The sound engineer is Andrea Minocchio. I'm Chris Policano. Until next time.